Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. This program, otherwise known as Alan Nathan Jr., the other weekend Alan Nathan Show hour, or just another legacy show because, except Jane Silk is still around. That is the Silk and the Silk or Joe Show title, but she's kind of in a soft retirement. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you regardless of what you refer to it as, courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to continue, and you can go to mainstreetradionetwork.com where you'll find out more about the Silk or Joe Show, find out about the Alan Nathan Show too. I host it 3 times a week, so why not? Well, sometimes I host it 3 times a week. Next week, we're going to be doing some reruns, because after all, it is the 25th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and it's also Labor Day. So Monday, we're going to be running for the Alan Nathan Show, the September 10th, 2001 version of the Alan Nathan Show. And then on Friday, the September 12th edition, 2001 edition of the show for the 25th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. And it didn't seem like I could do anything fitting of a tribute as running just what we had on those days. A little bit of what's going on before and then what happened right in the immediate aftermath. Anyway, though, Silk or Joe Show this weekend, though, is not going to be anything of the kind. Next weekend, I'm still on the fence about it. I might just run one of the Alan Nathan Show hours. That is the rerun from September 12th. I might run that. But anyway, so MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, regardless of which show you listen to, when you listen to it, which rerun you listen to, you'll find it at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and podcast for all of it. And just take it all in. Take it all in, right? And we also have a social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, X at Alan Nathan, in case you want to figure out which day I'm hosting and which, keep up with the schedule that I just gave out as to which show is going to be what. But while you're at it, we also have alannathan.com website now honoring the legacy of the late Alan Nathan. During his lifetime, of course, it was his website. So it's got his writings up there, articles, op-eds, columns, defining why he considers himself a centrist and his centrist perspective rooted in 1998. So, by those, you'll actually hear it in the September 10th edition of the program. His centrism at play, going after the Bush administration while also complimenting them. But yes, that's a big sales pitch for listening to all of our programs here on the Main Street Radio Network. And we also have an app for Android users, which can be found on MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And you can stream the shows right there in the app. And once you know it, we owe the Salem Radio Network a big heap of thanks for that stream, for providing it there on the app and on the website, and also for distributing our show in other ways, too, however you might be hearing it, aside from the podcast, which we handle ourselves. So I don't really have any particular subjects prefacing this segment like I always do with the Alan Nathan Show, so it's a little scatterbrained, I suppose, but guys, I need procedure, darn it. I need structure. There is something, though, that caught my attention, partly, and I want to talk about partly because I'm really hungry right now, but this headline over at Not the Bee, illegal aliens are stripping Connecticut beaches clean of crabs and clams, but woke officials are ignoring it. And it kind of brings together this, intersectionality between the left's lawlessness and the left's favoritism towards illegal immigrants, because the Connecticut, they have laws in place that about the preservation. Quoting to Connecticut Sentinel, quote, Connecticut General Statutes, subsection 26-228, prohibits taking any shells or shellfish from the shores or waters of the state between sunset and sunrise. The penalty is a fine of $100 to $500 and or up to 30 days in jail. So they have these rules in place, yet illegal immigrants are coming up and just stripping the beaches. And these rules are partly in place to, protect the population. And locals are quoting, unbelievable, isn't it? Take a ride by Old Mill and look at the Spanish guys with miners' hats on, responding one resident we asked who lives in the Campo Beach area when asked if what was going on lightly is legal. There's no blue crabs left. No steamers, no clams, no mussels. The answer to your question, absolutely not, especially now it's been closed down with all the rain. And another resident of Old Mill told us, quote, there's nothing left. They stripped the place clean. So these illegal immigrants, they come in, they wreak ecological havoc. And where's the left at? Where are these liberals at who want us to reduce our quality of life to save the earth, who think that we should let California burn down for the sake of a few salmon? You know, because they remember, or not just salmon, but some kind of fish anyway, because remember, Governor Gavin Newsom, one of the reasons why there wasn't enough water to fight the fires in Los Angeles last year is because he emptied one of the reservoirs to preserve some sort of fish spawning thing. So they're willing to let their cities and communities burn to the ground to protect a couple of fish. But then when you have illegal immigrants storm the beaches and strip them clean of shellfish, against laws that exist, mind you. Oh, but who cares? Nobody cares. Just let them. They have a right to be here. They have a right to do what they please. They have a right to destroy the environment if they care to. Who are we to judge, after all? And it's just a living for them. And, you know, they wouldn't have to do it if we just let them come into the country legally and stay here legally and immediately put them on welfare. Like, we literally, their idea is that maybe if we bribe them enough with taxpayer money, they won't commit crimes. And actually, that's not just confined to their reasoning in this matter. I might be using a straw man with that one. Of course, they might have other reasons, such as they just simply don't care about environmental regulations. Environmental regulations only exist to hamper industry and Americans. If environmental regulations get in the way of someone else, like a foreign power or foreign invaders hurting the American people, liberals are perfectly happy to ignore them. Forget about it. Yeah, as long as America's being hurt by it, we don't care. That seems to be their attitude. But there was, you know, somewhere along the lines, going back to what I was starting to say, that was prefacing this with, that there was some city or other that was actually talking about paying people for not committing felonies for a certain time. I'm going to say it was like a New York City idea, perhaps. Some liberal city or other had that idea. So, you know, that's not really a straw man. If you just did a quick Google search, you know, it just popped into my head. So I'm not doing a Google search right here on the air. Sometimes I do, but I don't really know if I'd do it successfully right now. But so that is this general idea that they have. And of course, we've seen this thinking before, this total refusal to understand why people do the things they do. During the Obama administration, you know, we have ISIS reigning terrorism all over the place. And what's the Obama administration response? Well, we don't really care. But, you know, if we were to do anything about it, it would be to create jobs, because they just need jobs. That's all. They just need money. Those poor people, they wouldn't be terrorists if they had a high paying job, if they had a white collar job, if they didn't experience racism in the job market. But then you have doctors and engineers joining ISIS, people who are gainfully employed joining ISIS, university professors joining ISIS, totally against the Democrat narrative, but they ignore it, ignore anything that goes against the narrative, much like these illegals picking the beaches clean. And, you know, there's an added irony to this as well, that Democrats actually think it's racist to say that this sort of environmental damage happens. It's bigoted. To claim that I guess it's bigoted to claim, I don't know if this is an irony, actually. It's just, rather, it's consistency with their logic that only white people are capable of damaging the environment. First of all, they don't really hold China any standards. John Kerry, the climate change czar under the Biden administration, outright said, as long as China made some empty promises about the climate, we don't really care about the genocides that they commit. You know, that's how much that's how much they care about life itself. So you can see that they might have some issues here. But like, then on the other hand, I guess that's the irony there, because on the one hand, they're willing to let China get away with genocide for the sake of making climate change promises. But then on the other hand, they let illegal immigrants damage the environment, strip our beaches clean, endanger species, and all for the sake of what? And if you call it out, you're called a racist. And we know this because, if you recall, the 2019 El Paso mass shooting, that the shooter was against illegal immigration and mass migration because of the environmental damage that it causes. And he was called a white supremacist for that. He was called a racist for that. How dare you say that the climate is damaged by these illegal immigrants, by masses of people storming the border? Yes, we can point to, as we talked about, I talked about it on the Alan Nathan show earlier this year. Yes, we can point to outbreaks of E. coli because of the way that these folks treat the farms that they cross illegally. But yes, we can also point to all the trash, litter, debris, dead bodies that they leave coming up But no, that we can't call that pollution. It'd be racist. How dare you talk about the environmental damage they do? And then when they get here, all the trash, filth, pollution that they bring with them. I mean, look at the filthy streets of Los Angeles where these folks are. Look at the food vendor issue that's now coming to the forefront in Los Angeles, where you have all this absolutely nasty garbage food vendors out there who, like, you know, they keep their utensils next to trash cans, and, you know, they don't wash their hands. There's rats and wild animals over the place, yet the city refuses to enforce regulations against them and refuses to acknowledge that there's even an environmental hazard from any of this, because you know they're not disposing of anything properly. But nope, they're illegal aliens, so they're immune to our laws. They're a higher morality. We should aspire to be more like them, and that's why leftists literally die to keep them in this country, as Alex Pretty and Renee Good did earlier this year. More Al Nathan, or more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
For many young Americans, making decisions about the future can be overwhelming. That's why the U.S. Army's newest campaign is inviting audiences into the field, the real-world training environments where soldiers gain the skills they need to take on any challenge that lies ahead. Here with more on the field-tested campaign is Sergeant Major of the Army Michael R. Weimer.
The field is our office. It's where training becomes real and soldiers find out what they're made of. By mastering the fundamentals, solving hard problems, and leading under pressure. Field Tested shows audiences what it means to be a soldier. A great teammate who's brilliant at the basics and doesn't back down from a challenge. The field is where we build warfighters.
For more information on how you can get field tested and be all you can be through Army service, visit GoArmy.com.
A new study finds a major increase in STEM learning in after-school programs, but gaps remain. Today, 92% of parents with children in after-school say STEM is available, up from 69% a decade ago. That's 6.4 million kids now getting STEM in after-school. Emma Benet, Overdeck Family Foundation.
This study underscores the remarkable work out-of-school time programs do to help students discover the joy in learning while preparing them to succeed now and into the future.
The study finds rural and low-income students are less likely to get frequent STEM opportunities, with rural programs also offering fewer opportunities in computer science and technology. Jody Grant, Executive Director of the After School Alliance.
STEM literacy is no longer optional. It's the foundation of nearly every aspect of our economy and our world.
The next step is clear. Invest more in after-school programs so every child in every community has access to STEM learning after school. To learn more, visit afterschoolalliance.org, sponsored by After School Alliance.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country, but unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. And we're joined by Michael Letts for this segment, CEO and founder of Invest USA, a national grassroots nonprofit providing police with bulletproof vests that has aided agencies internationally. Michael Letts has earned the Congressional Gold Medal Award for community service and has over 30 years of experience in law enforcement and is currently chaplain with several agencies as well as the State Council for the State of South Carolina. Michael Letts, appreciate you joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always encourage you with you, Joseph. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yep, glad to have you. So we're talking now about this staffing shortage that we have with police nationwide, police departments nationwide, and it's, you know, in some blue cities, it's particularly strong. I mean, I know someone who lives in Portland, and you know, she told me, you know, you can expect like a 40-minute wait for the police to show up for anything. So it's really a crisis level in some places, and you know, these are the same places where they say, "Oh, you don't need guns; the police will protect you." Well, what police?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Joseph, but let's go back a little history so our listeners will understand. Of course, this started back during Obama's administration. The critical attitude they had toward law enforcement began to turn a lot of our cops off, kind of like, why am I putting up with this? Understand, let's set the parameters. You know, we don't pay law enforcement. You're not going to be a millionaire if you go into law enforcement. You put your life on the line daily. In fact, you put yourself more at risk than you do in military operations oftentimes. You are subjected to bullying, is the best word I would say, from mainstream media, being portrayed and slandered that you're some kind of org or you're some kind of racist or something along those lines. You have bureaucrats that have decided, even though they've never even seen what a badge looks like or know how to shoot a gun, that they're better adapted to telling you how to do your job than you are. And you say, well, just ignore them. The problem is that prosecutors then take policies these bureaucrats write. And if somehow you can't remember it all, because you remember, you've never seen a bureaucrat write a one-sentence line. They're always volumes and pages full. If you can't remember everything, then they charge you. Forget the assailant or the criminal that you just arrested. They charge you instead and jeopardize your retirement, your savings, your family. They don't care. And so all that having been said, the first question that was begged is, why would you want to be involved in law enforcement to begin with when you don't get the backing? Then you went into the Trump administration's first term, and of course things were better. So it hung well. But then you had Joe Biden come in. Now, when Joe Biden came in, we had roughly 1.4 million sworn officers across the country. When Joe Biden left, we had a little over 700,000. Anybody with any kind of educational background will tell you that's a roughly 50% reduction across the country, even worse in some areas. New York City went from 40,000 officers down to less than 20. And so you begin to understand you cannot provide security and safety for the American citizen when you have half the personnel trying to do it. What do you try to do in that situation? Well, now I make you work overtime, Joseph, to try to cover for the people that are not there. What does that do? That just burns you out 10 times faster than you were already burned out to begin with. So then you decide you're going to leave as well. We are in a situation in this country that it is a national security matter to this country. We're in a crisis mode. The question now becomes, you have, okay, the president, you have a new president who supports law enforcement, Trump. What do we do? Well, you still got a couple of negative factors out there. You got the crazy left now trying to bring back defund the police. You got mainstream media still trying to tell everybody how horrible it is to be involved in law enforcement. So some of these aspects have to change. And why is that? Because the younger generation, the people, you remember, us older guys are retiring. Or getting out, even if we're not ready for retirement, just because we've been in it too long. But where is the younger people coming up through the ranks? They're not. And why would they? Because of what they're seeing. So we have to do something different to change and give the true image of what law enforcement is all about and excite young people to do that. We have programs available that we're implementing now we can talk about, but that's where we stand today because we can no longer provide it, especially in blue cities. And now they're feeling the pinch, Joseph. Now, nobody calls. Somebody comes when I call. Well, what did you think was going to happen when you got rid of them all? So we're in a major situation. We do have solutions, but people are going to have to step up to the plate to get the job done.
And I feel that at least with the committed leftists out there, you know, this seems to be the sort of thing that they visualized, but also the ones who, you know, would be inclined to call the police, they'd suddenly decide, well, you know, it's not that the police aren't here to help me. It's that, you know, I'm oppressed these people, so I'm getting what I deserved. And suddenly they're self-flagellating in the name of cognitive dissonance to protect themselves from the consequences of their ideology.
Well, you're exactly right, Joseph. And let's understand, people ask me all the time all across the country, why is this happening? Because they can't differentiate between two things I'm fixing to say. Their objective is to destroy law enforcement so that violent crime does go up, just what you're seeing now, so that we have a national security crisis and people don't feel safe. They realize that during COVID, people will do a lot of things they wouldn't normally do when they're scared. So they want you and the rest of the country to be scared that crime is going off the grid, off the charts. So you will then quickly say, who's going to fix it? Ah, they're going to step in. Now, remember, this is the wrong administration to do that. But if they get their way, the Democratic administration, the right administration, they will say, never fear. Your government is here. We know what causes the problem. It's those blasted guns. It's amazing how they're saying the guns shoot themselves. I haven't found one that does that yet, but evidently they're out there. And because of the fact that those crazy guns shoot themselves, we're going to go door to door and take them all. Remove all the guns from this country, and then everyone will be safe and secure. And that's all. This is not hyperbole. I've seen their plans. I know this is documented. This is what their intent is to do, and that's where they're headed. What they don't realize in the same breath, well, if you take crime away, they're going to get affected by the violent crime as well. Well, they don't really want that. They don't want to be hurt by the crime. They just want you to be hurt by the crime and get scared to take your gun away. And so that's the paradox that they have right now, Joseph. They're suffering, as you said, from their own stupidity, thinking that I can just graze crime for everybody else and not for me. Doesn't work that way.
And well, I believe we've talked about this before on the Al Nathan Show, the attorney general for the state of Virginia, outright, Jay Jones, he outright said in his text messages that that is what he wanted to do. He wanted there to be more crime so that he could grab guns. And so it's not really that unrealistic and unbelievable, since Democrats elected someone that they knew was saying exactly that, because those text messages where he says this were out there by the time of the election.
You're right. He didn't just get that out of his own back pocket. That is the platform. That is what the leadership within the party wants. And he's just reflecting what the party. And you remember, it's not a Democratic Party anymore. It's a Communist Party. And you go to Russia, go to China, and see if you can go buy a gun off the street and see what happens.
Mm. Yeah, they certainly have much stricter matters about that. And you know, the excuses they come up with, too, like, you know, Chicago, you have all these shootings. It's one of the most gun controlled places in the country, yet they have more shootings than, you know, Dallas, Texas. You'd think that with the lax structure around gun control in Texas and the huge gun culture, you know, it'd be a war zone. But if the leftist ideology upheld any fundamental challenges from logic, but no, it's Chicago, the gun controlled place, that's a war zone. And the best they can say is, well, these people who are too stupid to go and figure out how to get a voter ID, they're somehow smart enough to go and legally buy a gun when it's not legal to do that.
I love your analogy, Joseph. You know, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. And see, and they utilize having entrenched themselves within government. They utilize our agencies, our tax dollars, to further their cause. And what am I alluding to? The FBI did a study. Over 100,000 people were saved because people had guns and perverted crime. They don't want to tell you that, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, let's appreciate you joining the show. You have about 10 seconds left. Where can the listeners find out more about InvestUSA?
INVESTUSA.org. God bless. God bless America. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you for being on. God bless you. God bless America. And listeners, more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Federally funded cancer research has saved the lives of millions of Americans, but future progress is at risk. Here's Dr. Julie Grelo, Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, with more.
Federal research is the reason cancer death rates have dropped by a third since the 1960s. It's funded breast and colorectal cancer detection methods, innovative immunotherapies, and turned childhood leukemia into a disease where 9 out of 10 kids now survive. But proposed budget cuts and federal grant rule changes threaten the core of our research system, putting this progress at risk.
The impact of funding cuts would reach far beyond the lab.
Without federal cancer research funding, the pace of new treatments will slow, and our brightest scientists will be forced out of the field. Congress has until September 30th to ensure that we keep up our momentum. We need people to speak up now before we lose the progress we fought so hard to make.
To learn more, visit asco.org/save research.
High upfront costs prevent families from switching wireless providers. T-Mobile is changing that with new 2.0 plans with EIP Flex, a first-of-its-kind 36-month flexible financing option that covers device, taxes, and fees at checkout. For a limited time, well-qualified customers can score a new phone and pay nothing upfront, zero out-of-pocket, and 0% APR. Plus, T-Mobile's new student perks plans start at $30 a month with autopay, 40% less than Verizon and AT&T. Bundle 5G home internet for $30 a month and receive a $200 virtual prepaid card. Learn more at T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile. EIP Flex for well-qualified customers on eligible devices. Student 18 and up eligibility verification required. Otherwise, plan converts to standard pricing at additional cost. 40% based on comparable plans. Plan features like hotspot international data and taxes and fees vary. Bundle with $20 in monthly bill credits. Qualifying credit, student perks voice line, and new internet line required. Virtual card typically takes 15 days. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
The U.S. spends more on education per student than nearly any country in the world. So why do students still feel unprepared for the jobs ahead? CEO of ETS, Amit Sivak, has more.
AI is reshaping career paths faster than our educational system can keep up. According to ETS's 2026 Human Progress Report, about half of American workers feel underprepared for the next generation of jobs. That's a wake-up call for how we deliver learning and measure readiness.
As students head back to school,
we need to modernize how we measure learning. We need real accountability and competency-based education so that students graduate ready for the jobs employers actually have. The states aligning education with workforce demands are the ones seeing better outcomes for all their students.
For more, visit ETS.org.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be here with you all. And you know what? I just got a challenge from a guest that I think I will take up. So, you know, I was over the break, of course, this is, as you all are probably well aware by now, recorded earlier in the week. I'm not actually here with you on Saturday. Haha. Schmucks. I'm somewhere else. But this guest I was calling for the Al Nathan show during the break, because we take this right before, so I'm still in the process of booking guests for the Al Nathan show and making sure that show's all squared away as I'm taping this show for you guys. And, you know, I was telling the guests that two possible topics are going to be Iran and Lindsey Clancy. And he's like, well, and then that's an odd combination. But we'll see what we can do. And you know, of course, he was just in jest. But I decided, you know what? Let's talk about that. Let's mix them both together. Because we can actually, we can do that quite well, courtesy of the feminists, and also courtesy of a guest that I had reached out to someone about having on the Alan Nathan show next week, this Professor Janice Fiamengo. Of course, without my glasses on, the I looks like an L, so it could be Professor Flamingo. But anyway, she has this piece out called Feminist Women and Their Toxic Love Affair with Islam. And these are the women out there, like feminist icon, New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who dons a head covering because she's going into the patriarchal, male-dominated space of a mosque. And instead of striking out against, the oppressive Islamic patriarchy, no, she's going to show her submission to it by putting that head covering on. And that's how Democrat women act. They have actually used the Muslim head coverings as signs of solidarity with feminism. That's not what it's used for. It's used because the religion has such strict requirements on women. It's a very anti-women faith. And some of the more harsher regimes, like in Iran, which Democrats and feminists support, well, gee whiz, you could get stoned to death for certain things. You know, women and some branches of Islam outright, woman's not allowed to talk to someone to a male without a male relative of hers present. But women think that this is okay. Women think this is acceptable. You're not allowed to criticize it because you're racist. And these are the same women out there who, on the wilder side, saying Lindsey Clancy had a right to murder her three kids and that they themselves have felt like that at some point, killing their kids. And then there's the ones on social media showing, you know, I'm so enraged at my kids. This is my daily anger exercise because I hate my kids so much that I just need to smash stuff and need to scream as loud as possible. And because I'd hate my children, I hate my life, I hate everything, because womanhood is supposed to be getting a corporate job, getting a nice white-collar job, making six figures, and having free sex. You're not supposed to have any kind of responsibility. In fact, you're not even supposed to be able to get fired from that corporate job because, you know, you're a woman, you're superior to everything. That's what feminism has promised the modern woman. And if they get anything less, well, you know, I've seen this phrase going around the internet, you might have seen it, but when you're used to privilege, anything less, such as equality, seems like punishment. Okay, that's not how the phrase goes. That's my best recitation of it. But you get the idea. If all you've had is privilege, then equality looks like oppression. That's probably closer to how it goes. And so these women who've had, you know, all this privilege in their lives, like, I mean, gee whiz, look at Lindsey Clancy, who had all this privilege in her life. Wealthy family, lots of money, had a nanny for the kids, had the family strongly involved in raising the children. She hardly had to do anything at all with them. It was so much so to the point that she actually said she wanted to fire the nanny so that she could be more involved with the kids. And then, oh, that turns out that's too much work, just too much work. So I'm going to go strangle the little tots, just going to strangle them to death and move on with my life. And women are saying, this is what feminism looks like. This is how it's supposed to be. And those same psychotic women are out there supporting Islam, saying that actually this, yes, this is feminist. A woman should go out covered from head to toe, shouldn't be allowed to talk to anyone without a male relative or husband present. Yes, that is what the feminist future looks like. The future is female, and she's covered head to toe and is not allowed out anywhere without a male accompanying her. It boggles the mind how they can say that. You know, it seems like they're holding two conflicting ideologies in their head at the same time. But then again, isn't that what I was talking about at the tail end of the last segment, where I mentioned the same, of course, it's the same feminists, by the way, who are amongst this crowd, but the same people who think that blacks are just too dumb to get an ID to vote are also smart enough to come up to exploit some imaginary loophole that allows them to buy a gun legally when otherwise they would not be able to. Such as, I don't know, like one of the things that for that loophole that they say that they do is, oh, they just go to another state and do it. Well, first of all, if you go to another state and they see on your ID that you're a Chicago resident, they're not going to sell you a gun. They know better. But second of all, if they can't go to the local DMV to get an ID. How the hell are they going to another state to get a firearm? We can't figure out how to walk a block down the street, but we know how to drive several miles, and we know how to violate federal law legally. We know how to violate state law legally. We know how to violate city law legally, and we know how to talk a smooth game with the firearms dealer. Heck, maybe we have a fake ID. We can't get a real one and vote with that, but boy, it's so easy to get a fake ID to buy a gun with and somehow manage to pass the background check, which should show the truth. Yet they believe all this stuff. They believe that that's actually a thing that happens. And it's because, I guess, that maybe they just don't think. You know, their ideology does not require thought. Their ideology actively discourages thought. Mob mentality, just go with what you're told and don't conflate two separate talking points. Voter ID and gun control are two separate issues. Don't think about them together. Don't think about how one, your assumptions about one clearly contradict your assumptions about the other. Forget about that. And thus we see that thinking with feminism and Islam. Don't think about them. Don't pair them together. You know, you're racist if you think anything ill about Islam, so you don't think anything bad about it, and keep your Islam out of the feminism, mentally speaking. And what's going to be the end result of that? Well, what happened in Iran? You might recall how the feminists united with the radical Muslims in order to overthrow the Iranian regime in the late 1970s. And then suddenly those feminists, well, if they weren't executed, they ended up as, property of whatever man, as Islam dictates. Now, the feminists in the United States are out there saying this is a good thing. Again, they wear their hijabs and burqas in solidarity with the oppressed women of Iran. In fact, not really in solidarity with them, but in solidarity with their oppressors, they wear these things. Women in Iran, it's a sign of liberation when you burn them, much like burning bras in the 1970s in the United States. But nope, to Western women, feminists in the U.S. in particular, it's oppressing yourself, donning the trappings of male oppression and authority, and showing solidarity with that male authority is feminist and showing solidarity with women worldwide. Yes, we've got your back because we're helping your man whip you there. But they just see. I guess since Islam is not Christian, they don't see it as oppressive. Of course, if you actually read the Bible and read the Christian text, you realize it's not particularly oppressive at all. Or at least it's equally oppressive towards men and women, because for every bit of oppression against a woman, it's contingent upon the man observing certain rigid standards themselves. But that's a topic for a different day. The point is, though, they hate Christians, but they figure, thus, if you're not Christian and not Jewish, because, you know, Jews are genociders, apparently, you must be good, like Islam, for example. Therefore, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Thus, Islam must be our friend. Despite what they do with women, female genital mutilation, another topic. Women think that, it's okay, it's acceptable, it's a cultural thing. Just like having harems and slave wives and all that, it's just a cultural thing. We can't judge them, but it's feminism. The women volunteer for this or something. I don't know. They don't really think about it. In fact, the farthest they'll get is, I can't think about this because it's racist to think about it. Therefore, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to hate white males even more. I mean, you look at the rape statistics and whatnot. They don't talk about the crimes by illegal immigrants in those areas because they don't want to think about it. They don't want to think about how these third worlders they're inviting in for the sake of compassion are actually responsible for rape epidemics and things like that. No, they don't want to think about that. That's racist. That's bigoted. In fact, if you bring that up, they are incredibly dismissive, patronizingly dismissive. Oh, you're just a racist. Oh, that's not a real thing. Stuff like that just doesn't happen. Unless, of course, it's white men, Christians, and then, of course, it happens. Like, that's how warped their worldviews are. So is it any wonder that we have the same women who are out there saying Lindsey Clancy has a right to kill her kids, and we agree with her, we've felt the same way, would also be in favor of a religion like Islam, where, good Lord, there wouldn't have been a trial for Lindsay Clancy if she, in that case, I'm not even sure she would have made it to a courtroom. Her, the law would have empowered her husband to kill her straight off. And you know what? There's an argument for that being a good thing, although don't take that as an endorsement of Sharia. Anyway, listeners, appreciate all tuning into this little segment here, but we do have a guest on for the next segment of the Silker Joe Show coming up right after this break.
As artificial intelligence becomes more common in the workplace, new research suggests accessibility may be falling behind. Kelly Herman, Vice President of Accessibility and Student Affairs at University of Phoenix, has more.
AI can help create more accessible experiences through tools like captions, transcripts, and plain language summaries. But to truly benefit everyone, accessibility needs to be considered at the beginning when tools and policies are created.
A new University of Phoenix survey found 45% of workers say accessibility is missing or unclear in their workplace AI policies, and only 25% say the AI tools available through work or professional learning support people with disabilities very well.
Responsible AI requires more than adopting new technology. Organizations need accessible tools, employee support, and human oversight to help make sure AI works for everyone.
To learn more about the AI Accessibility Survey, visit phoenix.edu/AI Accessibility.
When 17-year-old Chris Meyer came home sick, his parents thought he was coming down with the flu. A day later, the high school senior died from meningococcal meningitis. His mother, Leslie, is sharing his story to help avoid similar tragedies.
I never knew there was an infection that could kill a healthy child in less than 24 hours, but meningococcal meningitis can do that. Meningitis spreads through respiratory droplets, so being around other kids, sharing water bottles, and kissing can transmit the disease. I didn't know that a vaccine may have helped to prevent my family's tragedy. In honor of my son Chris, I'm raising awareness about meningococcal vaccination so other families don't go through what we did.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends 2 doses of the MenACWY vaccine, the first at age 11 or 12, and a booster at age 16 when teens are at highest risk for meningococcal disease, which can be unpredictable and potentially devastating. This back-to-school season, discuss the importance of vaccination with your child's healthcare team. This message is sponsored by Sanofi.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of 3 boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Al and Ape, welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe here, very confused since he does the Al Nathan Show three times a week, and the taping of it begins in 10 minutes for another host. But also, this guest was on the Al Nathan Show at some point. We're joined now by Maria Kefler, former middle and high school teacher, co-founder of Advocates Protecting Children, and author of Desist, Detrans, and Detox, Getting Your Child Out of the Gender Cult. Maria Kefler, welcome to the Silker Joe Show. How are you today?
Hi, I'm well, thank you, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So we're talking now about this decision that came out of this federal judge in this lawsuit between the Department of Justice and California for Title IX violations over putting males into female sports. And this judge ruled in favor of California, who seems hell-bent on doing that. I mean, what's their motivation? I thought we were all for safe spaces for women having their own spaces. I mean, why are they trying to film with men?
Yeah, that's a really good question. This whole ideology, the gender ideology, has just been a disaster for women and girls. And it seems pretty clear cut, right? Boys are boys, girls are girls. But if you look at what Cynthia Valenzuela, the judge in this case, said, she said that the Supreme Court, quote, declined to decide whether Title IX permits transgender girls, yada, yada, yada. That's the crux of the problem right here. She's introducing this idea of transgender girls. There's no such thing. A girl is a girl, a boy is a boy. Gender ideology is based on this mystical belief that you can somehow have a differently gendered inside. But your outsides dictate who you are. The Supreme Court, in its June 30 decision in West Virginia et al. Versus BPJ, said that states' exclusions of males in girls' sports do not violate federal civil rights laws. And Title IX is about protecting girls' spaces. So putting boys into those spaces is just ludicrous.
Right. And we've seen the outcomes of those, whether it's sexual assaults, whether it's the biologically male people dominating those sports and depriving women of scholarships, scores, what have you, or even just physically injuring women because these boys are these biological males who don't identify as boys anymore. They're competing at a much higher level.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what these boys are thinking. It doesn't matter if they're doing this because they genuinely believe that they're girls or if they're doing this for a more nefarious reason. We've seen a number of professional sports situations or college and professional where these guys are mediocre athletes at best when they compete against other males, but then they, wipe the floor with the women when they join the women's team. But it really doesn't matter. Once boys go through puberty, they have so many physical advantages over women. It doesn't matter what's going on inside their heads. Their bodies are a danger to women. This is why women have fought for private spaces, for protections from men, because men are physically dangerous to women, and sports are just a great example of that. As you said, women are getting hurt. Women are getting violated, even just by men's eyes in the locker room. And it's not okay.
Do you think part of this, this question just occurred to me, do you think part of this could be stemming from just the shape that feminism had taken and a refusal to acknowledge that that shape does not match reality? For example, in 2014, I remember the Al Nathan Show at the time, one of the topics going around was people actually saying women were equal to men physically in every way. One of the guests for it was like Colonel Bob McGinnis, I believe, was talking about that. And yet that is consistently disproven by these biological males in women's sports. So rather than face up to that narrative that we've had since 2014 is wrong, you know, instead it's, well, no, it's a separate, these people are women. These people are just the same as women.
Yeah, I think it's following an illogical premise out to its logical conclusion. I mean, anybody can look at a man and a woman and recognize the difference. We're hardwired to be able to recognize the difference. And I think, you know, feminism is one aspect of this. You know, Gloria Steinem just died. She was the, you know, one of the main crusaders of women's rights. And I just told my husband this morning, I'm really torn on how I feel, because it's because of Gloria Steinem and women like her that I can have a credit card in my own name without having to ask permission of my father or my brother. So feminism has done a lot to grant me rights that I wouldn't have had otherwise. But it has also done a lot of damage in terms of convincing a lot of women that, you know, children are a bad thing for your life. And unfortunately, Gloria Steinem bought into the trans ideology and thought it was perfectly fine for boys to be in women's spaces, which highlights sort of the cognitive dissonance of this. You cannot believe women need protection from men, but then also say, oh, there's no such thing as a difference between men and women. We're all the same. It just doesn't follow.
Right, and that seems to be the basis of this trans ideology that, you know, the genders are interchangeable, gender is a social construct, but then if that's the case, how can women claim to have been oppressed unless it was voluntary?
That's a really good point, yes.
So, and as far as the evolution of feminism and Gloria Steinem to this point, I can't help but feel that this is just how civil rights movements proceed. There is an issue that needs to be addressed, but then what happens to the heroes of the movement after that? Yesterday's news, how do you remain relevant? You got to find some other issue, especially if that's how, you know, you threw away a perfectly viable career in some other field to pursue that matter, because now what do you do when there's no more money from this issue because it's been resolved? You have to find something new, no matter how radical that might end up being.
That's true. But also, I'd like to address that really gender ideology is not a civil rights issue. Civil rights issues are focused on people who cannot change the way they're seen. You know, your skin color is not something that you can hide, and you should not be discriminated against because of that. Your sex as a woman is not something you can hide or should be able to. So civil rights is about protecting people who belong to categories they can't get out of. But gender is not a civil rights issue. I mean, again, this is another one of those illogical arguments that they say, oh, nobody can tell if you're trans or not. Trans women look just like women and nobody can tell. But if that's the case, then they wouldn't actually need any special protections in law because they would just slip under the radar. No, it's actually pretty clear when you see a man dressing as a woman that that's a man dressing as a woman. So this has been erroneously and nefariously labeled as a civil rights issue, and it's really not. It's a privilege issue. It's giving men privileges that they don't deserve to take things away from women.
All right. Well, Maria Cuffler, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show to talk about this. Real quick, we've only got a few seconds left. Where can I just get a copy of your book, Desis, the Trans and Detox?
That's on Amazon, and it's also at Sophia Institute Publishing or at our website, advocatesprotectingchildren.org.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, thank you all for tuning in to the Silk or Joe show this weekend. Of course, our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.